We have Anne Andrews on the line from England, and we're talking about her book, Jason, My Indigo Son. And Anne, first of all, where in England are you?
We actually live in South Lincolnshire in England, Jerry.
And what proximity to, say, Manchester or London would that be?
We're approximately 150 miles from London.
Okay, got an idea now, and it's a nice day in England today.
It's been pretty warm today, which makes a change for us, so you know, we're enjoying it.
I have to ask you right off the bat, what do you mean, my indigo son? What do you mean by that term?
The term indigo, I believe it relates to the people that can see auras. It relates to the colour of the person's aura. It's like a black sort of indigo colour, hence the term indigo.
Now, Jason can see auras, or he has an aura around him?
He can see auras, but I've had plenty of other people who've met him and seen him speak have come up to me sort of independently afterwards and said to me that, you know, they've seen his aura. And they've all described it as the same sort of color.
Now, I take it we're talking about Jason being a star child.
Yes, we are.
Why don't you explain to people what do you mean by that term? I mean, we generally talk about that on the air some, but I'd like to kind of understand, first of all, what is a star child, and second of all, how did you figure out Jason was one?
Right. It didn't happen overnight, Jerry. It actually took us many, many years to even accept that, you know, strange things were happening to our son. You know, we looked for rational explanations for everything for about 12 years. We just could not accept any other explanation.
I mean, basically, are we saying he's a hybrid?
Not as I understand it.
Okay.
I understand the term star child to mean that they have a certain amount of ET DNA. And again, it's...
And how does that happen?
To be honest, I'm not really sure. I do understand that star children are born to, usually to experiences, where one or other of the parents... is an alien abductee.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you know, that's how...
Well, there's a term, another term that floats around a lot of times called walk-ins. And would this more or less describe what you think is going on here?
Yes, it would. It would describe it exactly. Truthfully, I had an awful lot of problems at Jason's birth. I won't go into too much detail, but basically, I wasn't told until afterwards, but they were expecting the child to be either stillborn or with an awful lot of problems, because they had all sorts of equipment ready and waiting. Instead of which, he was born very, you know, very healthy, a good set of lungs on him, which was thought at the time to be very strange, but the hospital put it down to perhaps the equipment was faulty. It wasn't until 18 years later, we were actually, myself and my husband Paul, were getting ready for his 18th birthday party here at home, and he came in and asked us to sit down with him, and then he went into a lot of detail and described that the day he came into the world, which he knew nothing about, and then told us point blank that he was actually a walk-in, that the child that we were supposed to have had left the body, had died at the point of birth, and he was able at that point to walk into the body.
So in other words, Jason, your child, the one died, but Jason took over the body and was born.
Well, yes, that is exactly how he explained it to us.
And Jason, how did your husband take that?
Well, to say we were startled would be an understatement. It was, you know, we just couldn't speak for ages. It was just, I mean, we put up with so much over the years, Jerry. It was It was like another sort of blow, if you understand what I mean.
So in other words, would you describe Jason as a problem child or just unique?
No, never really a problem child. It's just that since he was born, and you know, was lying in his cot. I mean, he would be moved from the cot. We could never work out how. You know, he would always be in the room, but either underneath the cot or by a chair. But see, again, we tried to rationalise everything. But then, sort of, when he started talking at about three, you know, he started describing little people that would come for him during the night, and he was absolutely terrified. But for that, I mean, his what he said happened to him never changed over all the years. You know, not up until he was 12 years old. Well, I mean, it doesn't change now, but it was when he was 12. That we finally decided that, you know, we should look into what he was telling us. It wasn't that we believed what he was saying, but we believed that he believed it.
Sure, I understand that. Would you describe these things as nightmares or just unusual, for lack of a better term, dreams?
Well, yes. As I said, for many, many years, we put it down to really, really bad nightmares. Mm-hmm. He would come to us screaming in the night. And other times he would sort of get up in the morning, you know, absolutely terrified, and he'd tell us that they'd collected him again, and they'd taken him to a hospital place, and he
What would they be doing with him?
But he would describe something like hospital procedures, but he was always lying on a really sort of hard, cold surface. Unable to move totally, except for being able to see what was going on. And he said, you know, sometimes that they would, you know, sort of touch him with things, and he could see the instruments that they used. And he had a lot of pain. I mean, he was rushed to hospital on three separate occasions.
It seems to me that a walk-in, at least in Jason's case, is physical as well as spiritual, because I mean, they obviously were checking up on him.
Yes. Well, this is what he understands it all to be now. And as I say, it wasn't until he was much, much older. I mean, obviously, as a child, he was absolutely terrified of what was happening to him. But it wasn't until he was a lot older that he was able to work through the fear. And at that point, he was then able to start listening, and then, you know, he went from there.
And are they still visiting him?
Yes, they are.
And have you been around when that happened?
Yes, we the whole family has been sort of subjected to you know, this sort of experience. You know, we've also had sort of friends and relatives staying that, you know, that witnessed things as well. But I mean, there were a few occasions when he would disappear totally from the house. You know, we would get up sort of during the night to use the bathroom and check on him.
And he wasn't there. That had to be terrifying.
It was. You can only imagine, Jerry, how we felt. It was absolutely agonizing. And of course, the first thing you think of is, you know, who do we call? Do we call the police? But then, of course, you run around like a lunatic, sort of checking, you know, the smallest cupboards and all this sort of thing, you know, where there's no possibility he could be. But it's just, you know, sheer terror of, you know, well, he's got to be here because the house is still locked from the inside, you know, that there's no way he could have got out.
And who has the older brother, you or does Jason?
Yes, we have two sons.
Okay. Daniel told you something, according to the book here, that I got to ask you about. Original soul?
Yes.
What does that mean? I mean, was he saying that, who was the original soul?
I mean, as I said, this was when Jason was about 12 that we started, you know, actually looking into everything. And Daniel told us at that time, you know, he said to us, "Do you remember, Mum, when I was little, I had a friend that, you know, we thought was imaginary. And he told us how he had been visited for quite a few years. And then he said that they stopped coming to him because they told him that they'd made a mistake and that they should be working with Jason, not Daniel. And this was because Jason had an original soul.
Did anybody know what that means? Did anybody ever ask Jason? Did Jason ask them? I guess it means what it sounds like. He's the first time out of the box.
Well, yes.
I wonder, recalling his previous lives, give us some examples of what we're talking about here. I mean, were they all good lives, or were they well-known lives?
Well, yes, basically. The way he explains it is that he's totally uncontaminated, if that makes any sense. He said that he's had many lives before, and he has some recall of all of them, of all of the carnations that he's had. But sort of throughout time, he's just...
Were they all Anglo-Saxon lives?
Oh, no, no.
Had he always been in England or in Europe or...?
No. He said all over the globe, you know, all over our world, as I say, as well as many others. No, he said he has recollections from those sort of times, but he said that he's been incarnated on this planet about three or four times in the past, but also on many other planets, in many other places. So he hasn't just...
Now, have you actually had contact with these alien beings? I mean...
Yes, I have.
How did that happen?
Basically, growing up, I had one memory, which I carried with me for many years, which I put down sort of in adult life, I put down to a really bad nightmare or a series of nightmares. But they were really, really powerful, if you can understand me. Very, very, very detailed. And it wasn't until that we actually started understanding what Jason was going through, and at the time, you know, when we actually decided or started looking into the alien abduction scenario, that I started sort of remembering more details, and it was sort of shortly after that I started having more experiences personally.
What kind of experiences? You don't have to go into all the great details, but...
Basically, there were times when I would be taken.
And they would examine you?
Yes, sometimes. Other times I remember being in a very large sort of area with lots of other people, looking at a screen or a monitor, which showed like a view of the planet. And then it was like it suddenly sort of exploded. But it was like there were hundreds of people,
what was this? If it exploded, you went back to Earth, so...
Oh, yes, I believe it was just that they were sort of showing us like a possibility, if you will. But it's, as I said at the time, you know, it was very confusing for me. But that particular time, Jason actually, came in and he started talking to me. And then he turned around and said to me, oh, I knew you were there. I was sure I saw you there. And so obviously we were both in the same place at the same time. But I've had other experiences where, you know, I've been taken from my room. I've been taken to the farm that we owned in Kent. And when I've sort of woken in the morning, you know, I've had sort of mud everywhere, all over the bed sheets, and which goes along with the dream that I thought I had. But obviously,
So there was some physical evidence.
Sorry?
So there was some physical evidence left behind.
Oh, yes. And this has happened quite a few occasions.
That leads to my next question. These aliens, are they friendly?
Some are friendly, yes. Again, if you speak to Jason, he'll tell you that there are so many. The way he puts it is that they're like mankind. He said you get the good, you get the bad. He said it's you know pretty much the same out there. He said that there are a lot of races who have our best interests at heart. He said, but then he said that there will always be the ones that don't.
So in other words, you're saying there's lots of races of alien beings that have been here.
Yes. Again, according to my son, yes.
And do you remember what these aliens look like, the ones you had contact with? Were they always the same group?
The ones that I remember, in adult life, they've been very human-looking. I believe that they're known as Nordic.
Yes, uh-huh. So they fit that description. Are they tall?
Yes, they are very tall.
Now you had some experiences with the Greys in the book, if I remember.
That's right. Yes, I have.
What was that like?
That experience stems mainly from my childhood. You know, when I was about, I think about 7 or 8.
Uh-huh. Now you didn't recall any of this until after Jason started talking about this, and then all of a sudden it kind of rang a bell about that you've been, I guess, an abductee, huh?
Well, yes, basically, and it wasn't until you know that we started sort of discussing it with other family members that my mom actually admitted to us that you know there were times when my father would be missing from you know from their home. And he would talk about things that you know she couldn't understand, and he would tell her that you know he went to a different place, and you know all these sort of things which she thought was just you know was just nonsense. But it was almost like pieces of a puzzle coming together. I mean, if you know if that makes sense.
Well, sure it does. You know, before I get on to some other questions I have, Ann, I have to ask you. Were you, you don't consider, I mean, you consider that actually the child, Jason, was conceived by you and your husband, right? I mean, it's not, from that standpoint, he was a, quote, walk-in.
Yeah.
So what is your feeling about these stories of other women? I must tell you, I've had many women on the air, and they tell these horrendous stories about being impregnated and coming back to see the fetus. What do you think could that be going on too?
Oh yes, I totally believe that, Jerry. Yes.
But it didn't go that way with you. He literally just walked in and took over the body.
Well, yes.
How does that feel that he's not he is the son you conceived physically, but not completely? How does that impact you?
Well, as I said, when he told us 4 years ago, because he's now 22, but say it was 4 years ago that he told us, and I mean the impact it had at that time was one of just absolute disbelief. It was like, you know, no way, not happen. But I suppose we've had to accept, I mean, we've experienced so much over the years, which has been absolutely unbelievable, and it's like you either get through it, or you just don't, you know.
I'm interested in the human element here, being in broadcasting. Is Daniel still at home?
No, Daniel lives with his partner and their children.
Okay, and... when Daniel and Jason were both at home, did you have a favorite? I mean, mothers. In other words, how did you feel about him compared to Daniel? I mean, did you have the same feeling? They're both your children, naturally, and I know you love them. So that's not what I'm getting at. But I'm getting at, is there a special feeling or not so special feeling about the star child, or is it the same? Because Daniel is not a star child, right? Okay.
Yes, but Daniel does display sort of psychic abilities a lot of times, which he...
Do you have any psychic abilities?
Sorry?
Do you have psychic abilities?
I wouldn't say so, no. You know, I'm very sensitive to, you know, to what people say, etc., and being in certain places. But I wouldn't have said I was particularly psychic. But sort of coming back to the boys, I mean, we love them both. We, you know.
Well, sure. I know you do. But I mean, I have two daughters, and I love them both, and at one time or another, one or the other might have been the favorite for a little while. But so basically, you've been able to deal with this.
Yes. Basically, I mean, Daniel is wonderful, but he's the sort of person. If he was any more laid back, he would be horizontal. He's just so.
How about your husband? Is he laid back?
Not so much. No.
Okay.
He does have a hard time sort of, you know, taking a lot of it, well, as we all do, but he's really great. You know, he sort of comes to terms with a lot of things.
So in other words, all of you have accepted this more or less?
Well, yes, basically.
Yeah.
But it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't that we just got up one morning, Jerry.
And accepted it, right. I understand. You know, you've had contact with all these extraterrestrials, for lack of a better term. Do you have any idea what their agenda really is? Or is it different with different groups?
Well, again, according to what Jason tells us, you know, each race, if you like, will have a different agenda. But there again, it's he said that they are sort of monitoring this planet because we are sort of initially the result of an experiment from, you know, from the very beginning. So that there is that interest aspect, and also that there is the pollution aspect. You know, what we're doing to the planet, and if ever it happens, it comes a time when, you know, we destroy our home. What repercussions it would have on the rest of our universe?
Do you think it's likely that before we destroy ourselves, which is, you know, you're acquainted with world events, they're not very good right now.
That's true.
Do you think there might be intervention?
Many times, but he says, he just nods his head and says, you know, very definitely no. He says that. He says, we are here, we can help, we can assist, we can teach you. He said, we are here for you. He said, we cannot do anything unless we are asked. He said, that is the one rule, he said, which, you know, we can never go against. He said, we just cannot interfere.
How about the governments and aliens? Something going on there, you think?
Definitely.
Like what's happening there in England, for instance, with that in government and the ETs, you think?
I think, well, definitely, that the governments know an awful lot of what's going on, that they know that there are sort of a lot of, shall I say, normal people who are having contact, and I think that they are definitely sort of watching these people. When we had our farm in Kent, we were watched very closely a lot of the time.
In your book, don't you say when Jason's asleep he has some sort of energy field or something?
That's right, yes he does. It's very, very difficult to sort of be in the same room if he's asleep. I mean, when he was, well, a few years ago.
I wonder how that's going to impact his love life. Does he have girlfriends?
Well, he's actually married, Jerry.
Okay.
Yeah, he's married to another experiencer.
Oh, so they kind of found each other.
Well, yes, they did. They came together, you know, through all of this. That's how they originally met, and you know, they're really great together.
What about that energy? What do you think that's going on there with that energy field?
Well, I've asked him about this, and he said in the beginning it was like the ETs will put this energy field around him for protection, because he said that when he's sleeping, he's vulnerable. But he said now, sort of over the years, he's learnt to develop this protection himself. So he said he's now, this is why wherever he goes, it doesn't matter where he is, this protection, whenever he's asleep, you know, this protection is there.
Well, you know, I must ask you this because I've been doing these type of shows for 40 years now. I'm an old dude. It seems to me the more I get into these subjects with people, more experiences, etc., there seems to be a correlation between ghost stories, not necessarily ghosts, but even, for instance, the vampire stories, and then you have cattle mutilations and human blood being needed sometimes in some stories by evil things. And it just seems to me that maybe mankind is kind of got all of this stuff messed up in their experiences in the history of myth, if you will. And it seems to me that, you know, there seems to be a great deal of truth in a lot of things that seem far out at first. Just like, I'm sure you just couldn't accept what your son was saying at first.
That's correct. We couldn't.
When you see these ETs, are they real? Can you reach out and touch them?
Well, we have tried, but...
And you don't?
Sorry?
And you can't?
I never have, but as I say, he does, mm-hmm. on a regular basis. You know, for me, it was always, you know, the paralysis.
So when you go to these ships, do you get the sense that you physically go there, or are you plucked out of your body and sent there?
No, I believe it's very physical, uh-huh. because I've actually sort of, you know, you actually experience traveling through material, like through a wall, through a roof.
Do they take you to other places besides just inside a ship?
Yes. So I've been taken back to our farm on a few occasions. As I said to you, you know, I've come back more than once with, you know, with mud everywhere and, you know, all this sort of thing.
Well, and so you can feel the difference in temperatures. In other words, if it's fall of the year, spring of the year.
Oh, yes, definitely. You know, you don't get, like, if it's a cold night, you know, you'll feel the air and you'll feel the cold and you know, it's as if you get up and you walk out of your front door. It's, you know, it's the same feeling, you know.
How about any of these ETs have a personality? I mean, you know, human kind. I don't know about you, but I kind of pick up on people's personalities right off the bat. First impressions, you know?
Yes.
Do you like some of these ETs better than others? Or are they likable or not likable? Or do they have, in other words... Would a psychologist still have a job?
Well, the ones that I've had experience with, you know, particularly the Nordic types. There's one particular one which Jason knows as Junus. Daniel told us about him originally, but he seems to have been sort of with the family from the beginning, as it were.
So they're kind of like guardian angels.
I suppose in a sort of way. Yes, you know, it's like we see that the same one.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, Jason sort of interacted with you know, Junus on a number of occasions. We've seen other you know, other similar beings. But this particular one is, I don't know, you always feel sort of calmer when you know, we see him, because it's sort of like, how can I put it? It's like he's known to us. And
So in other words, he has, if we say in the broadcast and show business, he has charisma.
Well,
you walk in a room, you notice him.
Yeah, I suppose if that's, yeah, that's one way to put it.
Now, you had another, you share a personal experience in another child, Nathan, who I guess was not born, or died shortly after. I didn't get a chance to read all of it.
Right.
But you feel Nathan is alive someplace, right?
Yes, most definitely. Yes, I have seen him. I've been with him on a number of occasions. As you said before, Jerry, about the ladies that you've had on your show who talk about having hybrid children
yes.
on ships, etc. Mm-hmm. But with Nathan, it was different because when I found out that I was expecting, my doctor advised us, advised myself and my husband not to go ahead with it because he said, well, you know, if you remember. When Jason was born, it was very much for, as I said to you, he was expected to be stillborn because we had so many problems. And the doctors advised me, not to go ahead. So whilst we were sort of, discussing the possibilities,
sure.
I had an experience whereby I was taken on board a ship and underwent a procedure. And I actually saw the fetus being taken. But for me, it changed everything because I'd always sort of considered the ETs to be, I suppose I never really had a set opinion of them. I suppose I was a bit complacent about it. But after that happened to me, I really hated them. I really did because I just said, they've got no right to do that. What gives them the right to do what they want? And it wasn't until sort of, many years later that, because this was such a problem, such an issue for me, I actually underwent regression therapy. And what I discovered was totally different to what I'd believed, which was that I was taken to a room with Junus. And I was discussed, or he was saying to me that, I can't go ahead with this because, it would take my life as well as the child's. And he was saying to me, Jason and Daniel need a mother, at this time in their life. We can't lose you. We can't afford to lose you. Let us take him, and we promise to raise him because he will not survive if he's born... on Earth.
Yeah. Now, is Nathan? You've seen him. Is he on another planet, someplace, or another dimension? What do you think happens?
I really don't know. I only know that in the regression I had, that the facilitator said to me, just as I was sort of coming out of there, she said, "Now, are you ready to see your son?" To which I answered yes, and. He came. He just sort of came into the room. It was like he just sort of materialized in the room, and he was with Junus. He was with when Daniel was little, he always called him the soldier man, and he just appeared with Junus, and he was just totally human. He had a tooth missing in the front, a boy of that sort of age. Thick curly hair and. All this, he was just totally human, Jerry. That's all I can say. And I could see my husband in him, and I could see both the boys in him. But the strange thing was that, Jason, was given no details about any of this, of what happened in the regression. It was very private. And yet when I got back, obviously my husband said to me, are you okay? How did you get on? What happened? Etc. Without even looking up, Jason just said, so why did you think, because when I saw Nathan, I said to him, I think you should have a haircut because, your hair's very long. I don't want anyone thinking you're a girl. And so when I got back home, Jason said to me, so why do you think Nathan needs a haircut, Mum? He said, I think it suits him. So how on earth could he have known what went on?
Yeah, you got a good point there. The book is Jason, My Indigo Son, and we're talking with Ann Andrews in England. And our time's almost up, Ann, but how about grandchildren? Do you have any grandchildren?
We're expecting one in September. This will be our first. So this is Daniel's child.
I hear... in your voice, maybe I'm putting something there, but it seems to me that you're wondering whether or not they'll be star children.
I am wondering, Jerry. I really am.
Yeah. Well, we'll be checking back with you, and we'll look for the book.
Thank you very much.
And they can order the book. We have information on our website. And do you have any information you'd like to give our radio listeners? I guess they can get it, the book. Do you have a website?
No, I don't.
Okay. We do have a link to the book and all the information, so that'll probably be the best way for people to get it. Okay, thank you very much, Anne, and it's been just a very, very interesting, and I don't know, I hate to use the term heart-wrenching, but in many ways it is. You had to have lots of mixed feelings through this entire journey.
Yes, yes, totally. It's been a real roller coaster.
Now, has this impacted your spiritual or religious life?
It has, yes, totally. I mean, before any of this, we were all quite, well, personally, you know, I was quite happy just to get on with my life and look forward to an annual holiday. And, you know, that sort of thing, I didn't sort of give anything else a second thought. But, I mean, since all this, it's really taught me that, you know, to sort of get back in touch with my, you know, my own sort of consciousness and my own spirituality. You know, I feel very much more part of the planet. You know, I feel very much more in tune with the Earth herself. And, I mean, I've always had a tremendous love of animals, but that seems to have just totally escalated.
You know, Jason, does he feel he has a purpose?
Yes, he does. He says that he has, how does he put it, he has a mission here at this time.
And do you know what the mission is?
I don't know. He says that he's here, as many of the star children are, to help, as I said to you, if or when it's asked for. But he does say that he has another thing to do here. Which he says it's not time for anyone to know about yet. He said, but when the time is right, he said you will have more understanding.
What kind of career does he have?
At the moment, he absolutely adores cars, anything to do with cars. At the moment, he's taking a course so that eventually he can drive. You know, the big. I think you call them semis, you know, the big trucks, the articulated uh-huh. lorries. That is ultimately what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Anne, and good luck, and it's been a pleasure.
But so basically, you've been able to deal with this.
Yes, yes. Basically, I mean, Daniel is wonderful, but he's the sort of person. If he was any more laid back, he would be horizontal. He's just so.
How about your husband? Is he laid back?
Not so much. No.
Okay.
He does have a hard time, sort of, you know, taking a lot of it. Well, as we all do, but he's really great. You know, he sort of comes to terms with a lot of things.
So in other words, all of you have accepted this more or less.
Well, yes, basically. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't that we just got up one morning, Jerry, and said, oh, well, that's
right.
What it is. That's
I understand. you've had contact with all these extraterrestrials, for lack of a better term. You have any idea what their agenda really is? Or is it different with different groups?
Well, again, according to what Jason tells us, you know, each race, if you like, will have a different agenda. But there again, he said that they are sort of monitoring this planet because we are sort of initially the result of an experiment from, you know, from the very beginning. So that there is that interest aspect, and also that there is the pollution aspect. You know what we're doing to the planet, and if ever it happens, it comes a time when you know we destroy our home. What repercussions it would have on the rest of our universe?
Do you think it's likely that before we destroy ourselves, which is You know, you're acquainted with world events. They're not very good right now.
That's true.
Do you think there might be intervention?
Well, I've asked Jason this many times, but he says, he just nods his head and says, you know, very definitely no. He says we are here. We can help. We can assist. We can teach you. He said we are here for you. He said, we cannot do anything unless we are asked. He said, that is the one rule, he said, which, you know.
How about the governments and aliens? Something going on there, you think?
Definitely, yeah.
Like what's happening there in England, for instance, with that in government and the ETs, you think?
I think, well, definitely, that the governments know an awful lot of what's going on, that they know that there are sort of a lot of, shall I say, normal people who are having contact, and I think that they are definitely sort of watching these people. When we had our farm in Kent, we were watched very closely a lot of the time.
In your book, don't you say when Jason's asleep, he has some sort of energy field or something?
That's right. Yes, he does. It's very, very difficult to sort of be in the same room if he's asleep.
It's going to impact his love life.
does he? Yeah, he's married to another experiencer. Well, yes, they did. They came together, you know, through...
I think that's going on there, that the energy field.
Well, I've asked him about this, and he said in the beginning it was like the ETs will put this energy field around him for protection because he said that when he's sleeping, he's vulnerable. But he said now, sort of over the years, he's learnt to develop this protection himself. So he said he's now, this is why wherever he goes, it doesn't matter where he is, this protection, whenever he's asleep, you know, this protection is there.
Well, you know, I must ask you this because I've been doing these type of shows for 40 years now. I'm an old dude. It seems to me the more I get into these subjects with people, more experiences, etc., there seems to be a correlation between ghost stories, not necessarily ghosts.
No.
Yeah, yeah, but even, for instance, the vampire stories, and then you have cattle mutilations and human blood being needed sometimes in some stories by evil things. And it just seems to me that maybe mankind has kind of got all of this stuff messed up in their experiences in the history of myth, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that, you know, there seems to be a great deal of truth in a lot of things that seem far out at first. Just like, I'm sure you just couldn't accept what your son was saying at first.
That's correct. We couldn't.
When you see these ETs, are they real? Can you reach out and touch them?
Well, we have tried, but...
And you don't?
Sorry?
And you can't?
I never have, but as I say, he does on a regular basis. You know, for me, it was always, you know, the paralysis.
So when you go to these ships, do you get the sense that you physically go there, or are you plucked out of your body and sent there?
No, I believe it's very physical, because I've actually sort of, you know, you actually experience traveling through material, like through a wall, through a roof, and you know, you then get, like, if it's a cold night, you know, you'll feel the air and you'll feel the cold, and it's as if you get up and you walk out of your front door. It's, you know, it's the same feeling. You know.
Do they take you to other places besides just inside a ship?
Yes. I've been taken back to our farm on a few occasions. As I said to you, I've come back more than once with, you know, with mud everywhere and you know, all this sort of thing.
Well, and so you can feel the difference in temperatures. In other words, if it's fall of the year, spring of the year.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Uh-huh. How about any of these ETs have a personality? I mean, you know, human kind. I don't know about you, but I kind of pick up on people's personalities right off the bat, first impressions, you know?
Yes.
Do you like some of these ETs better than others, or are they likable or not likable, or do they? In other words, would a psychologist still have a job?
Well, the ones that I've had experience with, you know, particularly the Nordic types. There's one particular one which Jason knows as Junus. Daniel told us about him originally, but he seems to have been sort of with the family from the beginning, as it were.
So they're kind of like guardian angels.
I suppose in a sort of way. Yes, you know, it's like we see that the same one.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, Jason sort of interacted with, you know, Junus on a number of occasions. We've seen other, you know, other similar beings, but this particular one is, I don't know, you always feel sort of calmer when you know, we see him, because it's sort of like, how can I put it? It's like he's known to us. And
so, you know, so in other words, he has, if we say in the broadcast and show business, he has charisma.
Well, I suppose.
If you walk in a room, you notice.
Yeah, I suppose if that's, yeah, that's one way to put it.
Now, you had you share a personal experience in another child, Nathan, who I guess was not born, or died shortly after. I didn't get a chance to read all of it.
Oh, right.
But you feel Nathan is alive someplace, right?
Yes, most definitely. Yes, I have seen him. I've been with him on a number of occasions. As you said before, Jerry, about the ladies that you've had on your show who talk about you know, having hybrid children
yes.
on ships, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But with Nathan, it was different, because when I found out that you know, I was expecting, my doctor advised us, advised myself and my husband, not to go ahead with it, because he said, well, you know, if you remember When Jason was born, it was very much for, you know, as I said to you, he was expected to be stillborn because we had so many problems. And the doctors advised me, you know, not to go ahead. So whilst we were sort of, you know, discussing the possibilities,
sure.
I had an experience whereby I was taken on board a ship and underwent a procedure. And I actually saw the fetus being taken. But for me, it changed everything because I'd always sort of considered the ETs to be, I don't know, I suppose I never really had a set opinion of them. You know, I suppose I was a bit complacent about it. But after that happened to me, I really hated them. You know, I really did because I just said, you know, they've got no right to do that. You know, what gives them the right to do what they want? And it wasn't until sort of, many years later that, because this was such a problem, such an issue for me, I actually underwent regression therapy. And what I discovered was totally different to what I'd believed, which was that I was taken to a room with Junus. And I was discussed, or he was saying to me that, you know, I can't go ahead with this because, you know, it would take my life as well as the child's. And he was saying to me, you know, Jason and Daniel need a mother, you know, at this time in their life. You know, we can't lose you. We can't afford to lose you. Let me, you know, let us take him, you know, and we promise to raise him because he will not survive if he's born... you know, on Earth.
Yeah, now, is Nathan, you've seen him, is he on another planet someplace, or another dimension? What do you think happens?
I really don't know. I only know that in the regression I had, that the facilitator said to me, sort of, you know, just sort of coming out of there, you know, she said, now, are you ready to see your son? To which I answered yes, and, He just sort of came into the room. It was like, you know, he just materialized in the room, and he was with Junus. He was with, well, when Daniel was little, he always called him the soldier man, and he just appeared with Junus, and he was just totally human. He had a tooth missing in the front, as you know, it's a boy of that sort of age, you know, thick curly hair and. All this, you know, he was just totally human, Jerry. That's all I can say. And I could see my husband in him, and I could see both the boys in him. But the strange thing was that, you know, Jason, you know, was given no details about any of this, of what happened in the regression. It was very private. And yet when I got back, you know, obviously my husband said to me, oh, you know, are you okay? How did you get on? What happened, etc.? Without even looking up, Jason just said, so why did you think, because when I saw Nathan, I said to him, you know, well, I think you should have a haircut because, you know, your hair's very long. I don't want anyone thinking you're a girl. And so when I got back home, Jason said to me, so why do you think Nathan needs a haircut, Mum? He said, I think it suits him. So how on earth could he have known what went on?
Yeah, you got a good point there. The book is Jason, My Indigo Son, and we're talking with Ann Andrews in England. And our time's almost up, Ann, but how about grandchildren? Do you have any grandchildren?
We're expecting one in September. This will be our first. So this is Daniel's child.
You know, I hear in your voice, maybe I'm putting something there, but it seems to me that you're wondering whether or not they'll be star children.
I am wondering, Jerry. I really am.
Yeah. Well, we'll be checking back with you, and we'll look for the book.
Thank you very much.
And they can order the book. We have information on our website. And do you have any information you'd like to give our radio listeners? I guess they can get it... the book. Do you have a website?
No, I don't.
Okay. We do have a link to the book and all the information. So, That'll probably be the best way for people to get it.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ann. And it's been just a very, very interesting and, I don't know, I hate to use the term heart-wrenching, but in many ways it is. You had to have lots of mixed feelings.
Oh, yes.
Through this entire journey.
Yes, yes, totally. It's been a real roller coaster. So
has this impacted your spiritual or religious life?
It has, yes, totally. I mean, before any of this, we were all quite, well, personally, you know, I was quite happy just to get on with my life and look forward to an annual holiday and, you know, that sort of thing. I didn't sort of give anything else a second thought, but I mean, since all this, it's really taught me that, you know, to sort of get back in touch with my, you know, my own sort of consciousness and my own spirituality. You know, I feel very much more part of the planet. You know, I feel very much more in tune with the Earth herself. And I mean, I've always had a tremendous love of animals, but that seems to have just totally escalated.
You know, Jason, does he feel he has a purpose?
Yes, he does. He says that he has, how does he put it, he has a mission here at this time.
And do you know what the mission is?
I don't know. He says that he's here, as many of the Star Children are, to help, as I said to you, if or when it's asked for. But he does say that he has another, you know, another thing to do here. Which he says it's not time for anyone to know about yet. He said, but when the time is right, he said, then he said, you will have more understanding.
What kind of career does he have?
At the moment, he absolutely adores cars, anything to do with cars. At the moment, he's taking a course so that eventually he can drive, you know, the big... I think you call them semis, you know, the big trucks, the articulated lorries. That is ultimately what he wants to do.
Well, thank you very much, Anne, and good luck.
Thank you.
And it's been a pleasure. Good night.
For me too. Good night,
Bye-bye.
Jerry.
Bye.
So it worked.
Well, that's interesting. Now, Buck actually never—he's just an arranger and a manager and a writer.
Well, for many years he played saxophone.
Yeah, but I mean,
he arranged for the Dorsey brothers, and you know, and he liked to work with singers.
Early on, did you guys feel like the Platters were? The hit that the group
we felt
for.
That they would be because Buck recognized that something in Tony's voice, and it wasn't developed at that time, but he felt that Tony had something that could be developed.
Now you left Buck Graham for a while and worked for Seymour Heller, didn't you?
No, that was I worked for them both simultaneously.
Uh-huh.
Because Buck couldn't afford to pay me in the beginning, so.
So you had to have a job.
So I had to have a job. Or he said, why don't you go over? He said, I think they're looking for some part-time help. And so I went over and introduced myself to Sam and Sam Lutz and Seymour Heller. And I started working afternoons. And then a lot of evenings I worked at the other office, or in the mornings I would drop in over there. And eventually I had a full-time job there. And I helped straighten out their office because they had a... They had a gal by the name of Dixie. Something. She was a fiery redhead. Mm-hmm. Had a horrible shade of red hair. And when I walked in to go...